last investigator I chatted with was Dr. Matthias Rummel, who met with me the day after he presented a plenary talk on a phase 3 German trial comparing bendamustine rituximab to R-CHOP in indolent lymphoma, a study first presented a couple of years ago at ASH. Dr. Rummel began his comments by describing the background of this landmark trial.
So we initiated that study, which was presented yesterday again in the year 2003, and we wanted to challenge the so-called standard treatment approach in patients with indolent lymphoma. Since CHOP plus rituximab is very established in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, it is also being used very often in patients with indolent lymphoma disease. But this was never, according to evidence, grade 1, as it is in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. So all the doctors, or most of the doctors around the world, are using it because they are convinced that it's a very good treatment regimen, at least in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Also, on the other side, since you cannot cure an indolent lymphoma disease with something like CHOP rituximab, eventually all patients are relapsing. Therefore, it was meaningful and interesting question to compare something newer against that CHOP rituximab regimen, because when you cannot achieve cure, you have to consider the potential high toxicity of CHOP rituximab, and you always have asked yourself as a physician if maybe a less intensive treatment, which means usually a less toxic treatment, in the end would make the same benefit for the patient as a CHOP R regimen is doing it. And so we learned in Germany in these years that the bendamustine has some high activity, and this was seen in the early years on a case-by-case situation when we just treating our patients occasionally, and then we are seeing good results and having good experience, and then we get some confidence to the activity of that drug. And that was a moment when I started phase 2 study in relapsed disease population. That is always, you start with a phase 2 in relapsed disease. And we saw with a combination of bendamustine rituximab what we have expected, somehow low toxicity profile and a promising high activity. And that convinced us to initiate a phase 3 study to compare that regimen BR against CHOP-R. We started that trial in the year 2003. In the end, we included 549 patients until 2008, and we had to exclude, due to different reasons, 35 patients. So in the end, 514 patients are fully evaluable for the analysis. And we planned that study initially as a non-inferiority study because we wanted to show what we planned, a lower toxicity profile compared to CHOP plus rituximab, which already would be a huge benefit for the patients. When on the other side of the coin, we could show more or less the same efficacy, which we defined in that study at a non-inferiority of bendamustine rituximab. So the plan was to show better toxicity, better tolerability for the patients with a maintained efficacy. And then it was somewhat a surprise that it came out that BR regimen was not only less toxic, but in the end also more effective. And as I presented it in the ASH 2009, and with a longer follow-up yesterday in the ASCO presentation, the difference in terms of progression-free survival was not only statistically significant, but also clinically relevant, because we have observed a quite large, impressive difference in terms of progression-free survival. And that is, of course, a very important result for physicians and patients.
Looking at those curves yesterday and the numbers, it looked like, compared to 2009, it seemed like the effect was greater?
No, it was not greater. The median progression-free survival was greater. That's true.
It's like 54 months versus 31?
It was 54 against 31. So that was a difference in ASH 2009. Yesterday it was 69 months against 31 months.
More than doubling.
But the hazard ratio meaning what is the difference, and the relative risk is the same as in 2009, but the numbers look even more pronounced, that's true.
And of course, the old question, what about survival?
Yes, so I showed very clearly yesterday, and also the discussant, Michael Williams, came to that point. We see no difference in survival so far. It appears that the curve may split with a longer observation, but this is absolutely immature. When you look to the mature points of the curves, for example, at 5 years, there is no survival difference. But I am not so surprised. First, the study, of course, was not powered for survival. Maybe then you would need much more patients. Second, you would need absolutely a longer observation period, because it is known from the biology of the disease that you can salvage the patients in most circumstances. And you can salvage them not only one, but also two and three times. And that is influencing, of course, the survival. Second, I showed on the second result slide for that discussion that this selection of the salvage regimen when the patients are relapsing was, of course, not defined in the protocol, as always. And so it was up to doctor's choice. So 37% of the patients after CHOP-R were treated with BR then, and also much more patients were treated with a high-dose treatment. So the doctors maybe had this feeling that the patient who is relapsing after CHOP-R really needs some intensive treatment. So therefore, 13% were high-dose treated with stem cell transplantation. And this was only the case in 5% of the patients after BR having a relapse. Whatever that means, and whatever was the rationale for that decision of the treating physicians, surely that is influencing the survival.
What about the subsets within this study? You had follicular lymphoma, marginal cell, mantle cell, both in terms of progression-free survival and survival.
I showed then exploratory analysis for the different histologies, because in the primary objective, we put together all patients we included in that trial, and that was, as you mentioned, follicular, marginal zone, Waldenström's disease, small lymphocytic, and patients who are elderly with mantle cell lymphomas, not eligible for high-dose treatment. And in follicular lymphoma, we have observed the same, a clear advantage in favor of bendamustine rituximab, which also was statistically significant. And then, interestingly, I showed the sub-results for the follicular, which means low FLIPI and the poor FLIPI prognosis group. And in both groups, BR was superior to CHOP-R. It was in the high FLIPI group, not any more statistically significant, but of course, if it's a subset analysis of a sub-analysis, and as the number of patients becomes small. But clearly, the curves always appears to be superior to CHOP-R, or saying it with other more conservative words, BR never was inferior to CHOP-R. So that were the results for the follicular. And interestingly, BR also was more effective than CHOP-R in mantle cell lymphomas. However, both curves in mantle cell lymphomas, the CHOP-R and the BR curve, looks very discouraging. So the results in mantle cell lymphoma are the poorest. So also that gives us a feeling we need something in addition in patients with mantle cell lymphoma. But the comparison of BR versus CHOP-R again shows us that one can use BR instead of CHOP-R, in particular when patients have a very high age and could not tolerate CHOP-R. Waldenström's disease also showed a huge difference in favor of BR, and in marginal zone lymphoma we have seen no statistically significant difference between the two curves.
And I guess the numbers get even smaller, but in any of those subsets show any hints in terms of survival?
No, in all the terms, it's more or less the same. The curves are overlapping within the first 5 years, and then maybe you get a feeling that in the end, after 6-7 years, they split. But as I mentioned before, these are the immature parts of the curves.
A couple other issues, second cancers, stem cell collection.
So second cancers, always was an important question, came always from the audience in the last years, and that is very good to understand because it's a very important concern, in particular because bendamustine is more or less quite new for many countries. And then you see the chemical structure and you have the feeling, yes, it's another alkylating agent. By the way, one cannot say that it's just so easy. However, you get the feeling maybe that compound is inducing a lot of MDS and acute leukemias. So the results really were very important, which I presented yesterday, with a median follow-up now for almost 4 years. We have seen no difference in the incidence of secondary malignancies. 20 patients after BR had a secondary malignancy during the observation period compared to 23 after CHOP-R. And in the terms of hematological malignancies, within this 20 in BR was one MDS, and within the 23 secondary malignancies after CHOP-R was one AML. So no difference in the incidence of secondary malignancies and no difference in the incidence of hematological secondary malignancies. Stem cell collection, I did not report during my presentation, but Michael Williams just mentioned it, because at least recently this was a question if we could mobilize stem cells in order to further salvage patients with a stem cell transplantation. I personally think that the stem cell transplantation will be used less and less often, so the importance of that treatment approach is becoming not so important anymore, but still it is being used sometimes, and in such a circumstance you would like to know if you could mobilize stem cells after previous treatment with BR. So from our study, we have at least the results from 20 patients in each arm in which we tried to mobilize stem cells. And Michael Williams had these results available, and he showed that one patient in the BR arm could not mobilize enough stem cells compared to two patients in the CHOP-R arm. So that is very small evidence, but it gives you, of course, a little hint that it is possible to collect stem cells after BR, and it should not be an impossible thing, as we learned it was after fludarabine.
So I know that you all reported an initial group of patients back in 2009, this question of stem cell. Is that what he was showing yesterday, and has that been updated?
No, that not. That has not been.
So that's the same data from the first time.
Yes, so as I pointed out before, not too many patients go to transplantation, so I don't see much more patients within that study going to transplantation.
So a common question that comes up about this study that's been coming up for a while is, when is it going to be published?
Yes, so the data update, which I presented yesterday, was with a cutoff date of end of October 2011. So that is approximately 6-7 months ago. And this data are now under current revision process in a journal. It is already being reviewed, and it's now in the second round. So I cannot give you an exact answer, but it's on its way.
I guess before we get into other topics in terms of particularly lymphoma, I guess just pause and ask in terms of what this study on BR means in terms of upfront management of follicular lymphoma. We've certainly seen a major shift in both investigators and oncologists in practice since your original 2009 presentation towards BR, but not completely by any means. And I was sitting there yesterday looking at those curves thinking, why would you use R-CHOP? Even the discussant, the way he worded it, said it's an option. Not coming out and saying, as some people might say, and I've heard you say before, that it is the preferred option. How do you see the debate that's been going on these last couple of years about this?
So I think the debate will go on, but it will shift more and more towards the BR regimen. So you really cannot find good reasons to not give preferable BR. So the first reason could be there is no confirmative study. However, we have to face that situation that maybe there is never a confirmative study, because who else is going to repeat the same study? And then if you would do so, then you have to do it nowadays with maintenance. And then maybe you have even to wait more years than I have waited before I could present my results. So just facing that situation, you are a physician, you want to wait for a confirmative study, but this will never come. So you have to make your mind if you are convinced by that one study or not. And the one thing is truly that it is no confirmative study available. Second, that Job R is out there for 30 years. And that is, I think, also the human nature. When you have done something for 30 years, it needs some time before you really can change the community, not only on the surface, but in the very deepest mind. I think that is the human nature that many doctors believe in that. So, of course, you know them also, these key opinion leaders. And if they are convinced for 30 years for Job R, it needs its time that these people also would say, now it's BR. Yeah, the younger generation maybe will adopt it earlier.
Yeah, just last night we had a major investigator kind of saying, I'm not so sure. But anyway, I've told you before, it kind of reminds me a little bit what happened in breast cancer with the so-called TC regimen, docetaxel cyclophosphamide, that Steve Jones presented. Study's never been repeated, not a huge study. And you look right now today, a number of years later, and most people are using TC, you know, just kind of clinicians thinking about it, kind of the way you've described BR. One of the things you mentioned in your talk was the issue of maintenance, and you just referred to it now. Can you talk about how you see that and the trial that's going on right now that you're doing, looking at duration of maintenance?
Yes. Also, I want just to add something more to it. It also, of course, is influenced the debate if to use BR or not Job R, that the registration is not out there for that particular circumstance. Of course, you have probably in most countries of the world, or I think in some countries of the world, the exclusivity as a doctor to make your decision. And the NCCN guidelines, of course, support this, but the very important piece of the information, the registration and the label, is not like this. Also, of course, that is making a little bit of difference. It's interesting that nobody takes care and pays attention if CHOP is registered in label, and I can tell you it is not. Yes, the anthracycline, as far as I remember, in Germany is only approved for aggressive and not for low-grade lymphomas. So when you would like to go back and to see if CHOP is registered, maybe you would see a surprise, but of course nobody is interested in that. So the maintenance, of course, is also an ongoing debate. However, that is a big advantage that this is approved and it's registered. It's in label, maintenance treatment after first line and after second line. And so that is, of course, the difference that the trials with the maintenance were registration trials. And on the other side, my trial was a typical investigator-initiated trial, which is not a trial which is primarily prepared for the registration. So you have the situation that the rituximab maintenance is approved, as far as I know, in all parts of the world. So therefore, many people are using it, despite the fact that some people still think about if it's really up to the prognosis of these patients, I mean to the survival expectation, really necessary to treat him right away with the maintenance, because also the PRIMA trial has not shown any survival difference. The one trials from Brett Carl and Michael Williams, the RESORT trial, may give us a little bit of feeling, yes, how much rituximab you would need continuously or intermittent. And of course, that is absolutely not the same, yes, situation, patients with low tumor burden. But you just get an impression that this could be a question also being addressed in the patients in need of treatment. So that is also an ongoing debate. However, the strength of that is approved. And so we added rituximab maintenance because that is a current label in Germany, 2 years maintenance after first line induction. And then also an interesting question is, when is rituximab maintenance really meaningful? In a patient who still has some lymphoma left after the induction, so that rituximab maintenance can work on, like a partial response, or maybe the patient with a complete response should get maintenance, or maybe he should not get maintenance because everything is already gone, or maybe it does not matter and you have to treat all patients. And the subresults out of the PRIMA trial suggests that the patient with a best response, a complete response, have more benefit from the maintenance than the patient with a partial response. That is maybe what you mean with maintenance. You can only maintain what you have achieved. So when you are discussing that fact, in that situation, it even makes more sense to add maintenance to the BR regimen, because as I showed yesterday, the quality and the depth of responses after BR are even more profound and better than after CHOP-R. So if we accept the fact that a good response really is the best situation for a maintenance, then we should add maintenance after BR. That is the reason why we initiated that trial. Yesterday I showed that ongoing trial of the STEEL, and there arises one question. Why we have done that two steps forward? Because when we first showed that BR is superior to CHOP-R, one should do the trial that BR or BR plus 2 years maintenance is making any difference.
So the patients in the STEEL trial didn't get maintenance?
On the first...
The trial you reported yesterday did not get maintenance.
Not maintenance.
But you jumped over looking at that question to go to 2 versus 4 years.
Yes, and we overjumped that step with the BR against BR plus 2 years, if the maintenance makes any sense in the BR regimen. And that was due to the fact that the German physicians really were not motivated to do that study because everybody is anticipating and assuming that the maintenance makes sense. So therefore, we said everybody gets BR and 2 years maintenance. That is now the standard treatment in Germany. And then we are randomizing observation against 2 more years with rituximab. So it's a randomized question of BR plus 2 years against BR and 4 years maintenance, addressing the question, what is the optimal duration of the rituximab maintenance?
Now, you also have had a trial for a while looking at maintenance in mantle cell, and that is no maintenance versus 2 years of maintenance. How did the physicians and how did you feel about that trial when the data came out last year suggesting maybe a benefit from maintenance? Now the U.S. trials are using maintenance or kind of almost as a control.
The same situation again. You have the first trial showing that there is something like the maintenance in mantle cell lymphoma. It is first presented at an abstract. You have a look, you really want to like to hear it again, and you see the results if they are mature and hold on. I was discussing it within my steering committee if we should immediately interrupt our study where BR was compared to BR plus 2 years maintenance in mantle cell. And we decided no, because our study nearly is at its planned end. If we will stop it and if we will lose the last 30 patients, we will lose power. And in the end, all scientific communities around the world would like to see a confirmative study. So it is very close to be done. Therefore, we continued. We are stopping that trial at this time. We have randomized 150 patients with mantle cell lymphomas of BR versus BR plus maintenance. It is not a high statistical power, but if the results of the first trial, which were shown in Lugano from the European Mantle Cell Lymphoma Network, are so strong, then we also should see it in our small patient group. And then it would be a confirmative study for that question, and then we should add maintenance for patients with mantle cell.
Any predictions when you might be reporting that?
No, but I don't think too far away, because in mantle cell lymphoma, you expect the results to be present earlier because the disease is more dismal than the other one.
What about BR in diffuse large B-cell and, for that matter, BR in transformed FL?
So in transformed FL, if the patient is transforming from a low-grade to an aggressive lymphoma, I always would consider to treat him with a CHOP-based regimen or even more intensive, because that is not a good situation for the patient, because secondary high grade is even more dangerous than just a high grade. And some patients, of course, were included in the trial from Jonathan Friedberg and Brett Carl. The results appeared inferior to the low grade. That is how we expect it. And that, of course, on the other side shows that bendamustine has some activity, but as expected, a lower activity. So I would always try to go for the intensive regimen if patients are transforming. And in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, I think the bendamustine rituximab treatment is a very meaningful and very nice treatment recommendation in that clinical circumstance, that a patient is relapsing after CHOP-R and does not have the chance to go to high-dose treatment. So I always like to ask in clinical meetings and in debates, just on a personal communication, what would be the treatment choice after CHOP-R and having a relapse 1 year later in a 75-year-old lady? So some people around the world say gemcitabine or vinorelbine or dexamethasone, or there is not a good recommendation out there. And unfortunately, we don't have too much data for BR, but that is the current standard approach in Germany in the routine day to give these patients BR. And we see excellent results with that situation in the palliative intended treatment after CHOP-R. I know that one Japanese trial was reported here on the meeting, and they showed good results with a BR regimen in the relapsed diffuse large B-cell.
Yeah, I think they had like a 68% response rate, but it seemed like it was kind of brief.
Yes, of course, and everybody expects that everything is brief, because after CHOP-R, you have no good prognosis anymore. Only you can cure maybe 30% or so with high-dose treatment, as we have seen from the CORAL trial with RIs against RDHAP followed by autologous stem cell transplantation. And it appears that the high-dose treatment plus stem cell transplantation is now becoming more difficult to reach a good response when patients all are treated with rituximab-containing regimen.
Talking about transformation reminds me, I didn't ask you, I think I saw you present this yesterday in the BR-RCHOP study, the rate of transformation was very low.
Very low, yes. So less than 2%. But I cannot tell you if that is as expected or it is lower than expected. Usually you see it with continuous observation period, you will see more and more transformation. It occurs always continuously over the time of the disease.
What are some of the new agents out there, and just in lymphoma in general and CLL, that you're excited about and that your group is interested in looking at?
So ibrutinib is something which is interesting. The license holder or the company behind ibrutinib is planning a four-arm trial in which BR is a backbone. And I cannot tell you the exact treatment design. But
this is ibrutinib?
Ibrutinib.
What is that? What kind of agent is it? What kind of action?
I think you have to look at the BTK inhibitor.
BTK inhibitor.
I think so. And also the other thing, of course, is KL-101. The ibrutinib also appears to be very promising. And also on that meetings here, I have met so many small new upcoming companies presenting some interesting ideas to me. And I have the feeling the one or the other will be also a valid option for the future.